Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 91 of the Self-Help Podcast. Give me that microphone back, Sean. What are you doing? Are you okay?
This is my turn.
We've had a bit of feedback about our audio quality and that we're in sound like we're in different rooms.
Yeah, that's because I sit back, I'm laid back and relaxed, you see, and you're over the microphone like a praying mantis.
Tense. I'm at work here, man.
So I've come forward. Can you hear me, everybody?
Yeah. I'm assuming it's all right.
You need to just hang back.
You think?
Yeah. It's okay.
A lot of people think I'm the relaxed one. Apparently not, eh?
Get off.
This is the Self-Help Podcast. We're on episode 91, and as I've said, if you don't know who we are, go to liveinthepresent.co.uk. There's a blog post to accompany this podcast, isn't there, Sean?
There is indeed.
Which I've seen a rough... There's a few spelling mistakes in it at the moment, but...
They're called typos.
Yeah, we'll iron that out. Head to the website and have a look at that. And lots of other goodies on there too.
Yeah.
This week we're talking about influential people, aren't we, Sean?
Yeah.
We'll dive into that shortly, but yeah, have you been? I should say, happy birthday.
Yes, happy birthday to me.
Yeah, you're not allowed to sing it to yourself, and I'm not singing it to you. You were away, though? Just you and Rick?
Yeah, we've been away to the Yorkshire Dales, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. We stayed in a wonderful cottage, which was a 17th century original. Amazing old farmhouse.
Did you build it?
Yeah, last week. But it was good. It's great. Mm. And I'm not going to tell anybody where it is because I don't want anybody else to go.
No. Or how old you are.
Yeah, no, because I'm only 27.
Yeah. But did Ree sing you happy birthday? Because just the two of you away this time.
No, she didn't actually. This is very remiss of her. But I did get... I was looked after very, very well.
I've seen a few pickies look very nice.
Yeah. My actual birthday, we spent at a... spa. That's the word.
Health,
it's a spa.
It's a resort type thing.
Yeah, it was cool. That was good. Yeah. But that comes into next week's podcast a bit. So we'll look at that.
Okay. Flip back.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I know what you mean. Yeah. I know what you mean. I've had a good week too. Just still practicing my own unique blend of parenting.
I like this musical beds.
Yeah. We're at that stage. Jacob's sleeping really well. Sleep update for you. William has been for ages. Loves to sleep. But yeah, at some point in the night, something will happen and someone will end up in a different bed and someone will end up in our bed, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's part of the fun
of
being a dad.
It was four in a bed right before I came here this morning.
Yeah.
It was four in a bed. Quickly whacked the iPad on for Will so it kept him amused so he didn't jump all over Jacob.
Yeah.
Let Mummy have a little bit
more. Maybe you're going to have to get a bigger bed.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be against that. Be nice.
Yeah. One of the places we stayed in a while ago had an 8-foot wide bed. Which was enormous, extraordinary. Yeah, you need one like that.
So were you both right on the edges?
You have to shout at each other, hello!
Yeah. Alright, shall we crack on with this week's show?
Yeah.
This was your idea, I think, this one, influential people.
No, it actually came from... It was a Connie-inspired. One, our friend Connie.
Neck, not another Connie one.
Yeah, she's good, Connie.
She's got a monopoly on all the episodes. She must have thought, sort of about 50% of our shows. I'm only joking, Kai.
All right, 30%.
Awesome, okay, cool. Well, yeah, I was looking back through our archives and we did one on about teachers and gurus.
Yeah.
I think it was episode 19, something like that.
Yeah.
I'll put the link in the show notes. So I'm thinking, is this going to be a similar kind of thing?
I think that the bit that comes over in looking at it now is... Especially with the changes going on in British society, with the closing down of the welfare state, and people having to kind of be realigned with things. I mean, I'm back into an organisation this week and next week that are downsizing again. And one of the things that comes out when you see organisations reorganising and downsizing is that the issues about where you end up is to do with who you know.
Right.
Yeah, it isn't just to do with the qualities that you have, and that's part of the influential stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, who influences what we do and who we are, not just about how we think and how we feel, but actually about where we are in society.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, influence is an interesting one. I'm watching House of Cards at the moment. Actually, I'm just taking a little break for it because I've been watching it with Beth and it's not been quite as... It's brilliant, like amazing.
But you're watching the American one, aren't you?
Yeah.
If you go back to the original Brits, the British one, which is all about Houses of Parliament here.
That's on Netflix as well, actually, interestingly, so I'll have a look at that when the time comes. But it's not making great couples telly for a M&B, actually.
Right.
Because it's not like you get to the end of an episode and you're dying to itching for the next one.
Is there a kind of a love story in it?
His wife, they have quite an interesting relationship. And there's a journalist who he gets a bit involved with early on.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with it. But that's influence on a huge grand scale. Obviously, that one's set in Washington. You know, he's rubbing shoulders with president, vice president, and all that, and all the minions, and he's playing little games with journalists and setting off little fires here and there, and just he's enjoying the game of it almost, rather than he doesn't seem to be there to do much, you know, good for his common the working man of America and all that stuff.
But people in those positions. And lots of people that end up in those positions do it deliberately because they want to be influential.
Yeah.
You know,
is there a certain type of person that wants to get into politics, do you think?
Very often they're psychotic.
Okay. Say it like it is, Sean.
Yeah, say it like it is. One of the things that comes out in quite a bit of research, but you can see it played out in the workplace, is that many people that aspire to be higher managers or to be politicians are on the psychopathic spectrum.
Okay.
And what that means is, to be on the psychopathic spectrum, is that they lack empathic insight. They may have manipulative insight. They know how to manipulate things to get what they want, but they don't necessarily have the empathy to feel the effect that the things they're doing have on other people.
Okay.
Which is a classic kind of politician stance, really.
Yeah.
You know, politicians close things, move things, and change people's benefits and do whatever.
Mm.
And they are doing things that will never affect them. So many of the people that are involved in the dismantling of the welfare state, whether it's the NHS or benefits or whatever, will never need to use that system, and yet they are influential in its demise.
Yeah, but you know, I've done a bit of work in the health service, and you know, I've met with some of the chief execs and all that stuff, and lovely people. But yeah, they're the same, I guess, really, because they're pulling these big levers high up the system, hoping for.
Occasionally you will get a higher manager or a chief executive who has that empathic insight to go and talk to the workforce.
Yeah.
When you get a chief executive who has the balls and the bottle to go and walk the floors and talk to the real people, then you get real management. When you get people that are isolated and distant and they have no connection with the people that they're managing.
Yeah, I think looking kind of icons in the business world, Steve Jobs always crops up. I think he would have celebrated his 60th birthday in the last few days, actually. But he was probably pretty high up the psychotic spectrum.
I wonder what he was like to work for.
Yeah, he was from what I've read, perfectionist, but he did walk the floors. You know, he would go into the design studio every day and see what was in the pipeline. You know, he would make tiny little tweaks to software and hardware changes. And you know, had hundreds of thousands of people in the supply chain working below him, but ultimately it was kind of what he said when, you know.
Yeah. But in that sense, he influenced a lot of people. And I guess if you look at an organisation like Apple, it's influenced us all in maybe what we're prepared to accept in terms of design and usability, stuff like that.
Sure.
And certainly it would appear to me, you're more techno than I am, but it would appear to me to be that Apple do something, then other manufacturers follow.
Yeah.
You know, they tend to lead ideas and design, and other people play catch-up.
Yeah, sure.
iPads and tablets, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. There's a long-form interview with or profile of Johnny Ive, who's the head of design at Apple. So he designed the look of the iPod, the iPad, the iPhone.
Right.
And the iMac, you know, the colourful iPad, the iMac of the mid-90s, late 90s, which kind of brought them back in the game. So, very steadfast view on things and principle but that love of simplicity. But I guess with influence, getting back to that slightly, a person can't be given that kind of power without well, people give it to him, give him Dudley. So,
and that's a really important thing, is that the politicians can only do what they do because the people allow them to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If we really want to, and if people are as angry and upset as a lot of the brouhaha online would seem, you know, why don't we just shut these guys down? Because we're not doing
Think about Maggie Thatcher and the poll tax.
Yeah.
She had to withdraw it because people refused to pay it.
Right.
Yeah, and when you get public action en masse like that, the French are much better at it than we are.
Yeah.
The French will come out on the streets and say, you know, go away, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
Whereas we tend to be more compliant here. But people only have the power or the influence that we give them.
Exactly.
Yeah, a designer may design a whole range of clothes, whether trousers go from being flared and bell-bottom to being tight and drainpipe. Is a fashion decision that happens with the designer.
Yeah.
If we accept it as a society, then okay, we've been influenced and we've changed what we're wearing. But it's us that's been active in that process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Yeah, the whole online world now. You know, celebrity and influence now is there's tiny little microcosms. So, you know, I only found out a couple of years ago who Ed Sheeran was. I saw this ginger guy on telly performing in front of Buckingham Palace, and I had the gall to ask in front of all my pals, "Who's this guy?"
Yeah.
And they like couldn't believe.
You don't know.
Didn't know who Ed Sheeran was.
Yeah.
I still don't really know any of his tunes except for the ones on the radio. But like from my world, I asked the question there and then. Okay, well, do you know who Tim Ferriss is? Ever heard of this guy? Showed a picture of him, and you know he's a micro celeb compared to Ed Sheeran, I'll get that, but they didn't have a clue who he was. I was like, well, why not? You don't know who this guy is. Couldn't believe it.
So maybe what we're looking at is that influential people are only working in certain kind of sectors of society.
Yeah.
So the people that I would say have influenced me and have had an important effect on my life may have had no effect on yours at all.
True, yeah.
And I suppose that's true right down to parents. I mean, you've got kids, I've had kids. That whole idea of we are influencing their outcomes.
And yeah,
we all have the jokes about my father. And his influences on me that were primarily negative have a positive outcome because they made me do things.
Yeah, that's an important point, right?
Yeah.
Because no matter how much of an arse a person may be, you can still learn things from them, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing. One of the things I say in the blog is that one of the things that my teacher said to me was that to the awake mind, everybody and everything is a guru.
Yeah.
Everything will teach you something. So he would say to me, when you meet a client for the first time, the very first thing you should ask yourself is, what has this client come to teach me?
Mm-hmm.
Because you will learn as much from the client as you would ever give to the client. It's a two-way process.
Okay.
Yeah. And in that sense, I think you can learn things from a dog or a chimpanzee. You know, if you're there and you're awake and you're communicating with, then you can learn all kinds of things.
Okay,
and children particularly, amazing things that kids teach.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure Bethan would agree. I mean, like Jacob. I mean, we learn things from Jacob just because he's. I mean, he's only 4 months old, but
yeah,
you know, you can tell the lights are on there and stuff's starting to happen. But yeah, yeah, Will is just amazing.
Yeah,
he's a proper little freak of nature, but in a good way.
Mm.
So chatty and. I feel like he's in a real golden age at the moment, actually, and I was getting a bit sad about it the other night because he had a nightmare.
All right.
And I had to go through his bedroom. He came into my room, just stood alongside my bed, and I was still kind of half awake. It was probably about 1 in the morning, and usually he's like, "Oh, can I hop in?" And I said, but he didn't say that. He just kind of looked at me, so I think he was sleepwalking. And then I followed him back to his bedroom and tried to crack a joke about some socks on the floor, and he wasn't having it. And he went in his bedroom and pointed to the pillow and said, "Can you get that off my pillow?" So I was like, I was a bit scared actually, I was a bit freaked out. I thought, there's a spider on there or something. So there's no way I'm feeling around for that in the dark. So I put the light on, and there's nothing there. Nothing in his bed. And in the morning, I asked him, "Do you remember, Will, about what happened last night?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah, there was a chicken, but I squashed it." Chicken? But anyway, my point is that I feel like he's starting to, just by having bad dreams and nightmares, he's starting to like realise that there's some bad stuff in the world, or the universe can do bad things sometimes.
Yeah.
So he's in that golden age at the moment where he can express himself really well, he can speak amazingly, but everything's amazing to him. So
yeah, and I think that that's the magic, is that when you're with a child, if you're awake to what's going on and you start to see the world through their eyes, they live in that magical world of discovery that we get jaded to, we stay awake.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? So rather than me being worried that he's going to come and join my world of misery and terrorism and AIDS and famine and death.
Oh, you live in a good world, though. I'm not going to you for influences.
Yeah, and House of Cards and, you know, funny YouTube channels. Maybe I should be looking to join his world, isn't it? Of just constant wonder and, like, inspiration.
Well, one of the things, I don't bang any religious drum at all, but I'm fascinated by the Bible because it was pushed down my throat when I was a kid. Yeah. But one of the things in it is the concept that to enter the kingdom of heaven, you have to become as a child.
Yeah.
Yeah, and which means you have to have that kind of new, refreshed...
Yeah, you know, my father-in-law did a sermon about that not too long ago. I was quite hooked on that. It's interesting.
Yeah, and that's a very powerful concept to me. You know, and it means that you have to sweep away your preconceptions and actually allow the modern, new, up-to-date influences to be there with you, but enjoying the moment, living the present, being there.
Yeah.
The kinds of things, because the kids, my kids, eldest one, Danny, I can remember taking him to the zoo, and the first time, because he was like Will's age, a bit younger maybe, and the first time he saw a giraffe, and he started at the feet, and his head moved up, this enormous structure, and as it moved up, his eyes and his mouth opened with this kind of wonder, this enormous thing, and just seeing it through his eyes was just fabulous, you know, amazing, that kind of thing.
You do get a little... grown-ups tend not to be, spellbound by many things, but I tend to find, you'll watch, if an aeroplane flies overhead, most people will have a little look at it.
Mm.
So that somewhere at the back of their minds, they must be thinking, blimneck, that's pretty cool. So anyone that doesn't look at an aeroplane when it's passing overhead, I'm a bit sceptical about. It's like, come on.
Yeah, but it's interesting that when I look at an aeroplane flying overhead, I'm always thinking, I wonder where it's going, wouldn't it be good to be on it?
Oh, yeah.
That idea of going somewhere new, like new experience, new things, exciting stuff, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law's a pilot, a commercial airline pilot, so, for us, it's like we're speaking to Will. Oh, who's flying that plane, Will? Uncle Tom?
Yeah.
Planes are cool.
I suppose the thing that fascinates me working with people is that if you look at why do people think, feel or do the things that they do, and unless they get to the point where they're awake, because in terms of human consciousness, I see it as people are either deep asleep, majority of the population, just kind of functioning, people that are in that kind of dreamy state, people that are waking, and then people that are awake.
Yep. Yeah,
as it is like a pyramid. You know, the majority of people are in the deep sleep phase. But if you start to look at what is it that has influenced me? Why do I buy the newspaper I do? Why do I vote the way that I do? You know, and you start to examine where this came from. Very often, none of it we own.
Uh-huh.
It was, you know, we do it because that's what we always did.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, like the food that we eat or whatever. And it's only when you get to that waking and awake state that you question where you are and what you're doing. And that's when people change. And very often in a therapeutic situation, that's the process, is the waking up. And then people decide to change.
If you're seeing people then in a therapeutic, in a professional manner, and there's someone in a person's life that is clearly having a damaging effect, are you teaching them to try and go with it and learn from those people and get out of it? Or are you just saying, Get out.
To me, it's more about levels of awakeness. If you're in a situation where someone has kicked you up the backside every 15 minutes for the last 30 years or something, and then they stop doing it, many people will feel really odd. So they will go and look for someone else to kick them up the backside to feel normal. So that you get this odd thing of people maintaining behaviours that have been influenced by past experience and then trying to recreate it. It's only when you wake up and think, you know, why on earth do I want to have someone kicking me up the backside, that we start to change. So I suppose that therapeutic work isn't about telling people what to do or what not to do. It's about enabling them to wake up to the situation that they're in and make reasoned and reasonable, rational decisions about where they are and what they want. Yep. Because you remember on the course, I've been running the course, and the question was, what do you want? What do you really, 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 really want? Because if you know that, and most people don't, if you say, what do you want?
Oh, yeah, someone asked me yesterday, actually. I was having, like, a lunch, a business lunch with a couple of guys I'm doing some work with. That came up, actually, because we start to work quite closely together. We have different businesses, but we combine quite nicely. So we've been, to start of discussing maybe getting a shared office, maybe in Liverpool or maybe on the world, we're not sure yet. But yeah, she asked me, the lady I'm working with, you know, what do you really want, Ed, you know, from business? So she doesn't want to lead me down this path where it's taking me somewhere I don't want to go. I didn't actually have a great answer, to be honest. It made me think. So yeah, even after 91 episodes of this flaming show, it's like 10 years working with you.
You mean it hasn't been that influential in your life?
Yeah, it's interesting though, isn't it? But I'm happy, you know. I'm still enjoying just finding my path.
Yeah, but it's the waking process. I think all of us in life are going through a waking process. So some people wake up as they get older. Some people are deep asleep at 90. You know, it depends on where people are in that consciousness world.
Yeah. Sure.
But if you're in a position, I suppose the two things that are meaningful to me is one is that you're actively making decisions about what you do, so that you're happy about it. Isn't this that whole thing about if you wake up in the morning, get out of bed and go and do what you want, you're a happy person.
Mm-hmm.
If you wake up in the morning and go and do things you don't want to do, then you're an unhappy person.
Yep.
You know, and lots of people do that. And very that influential thing about put up with what you've got. You know, leopard can't change its spots, old dog can't learn new tricks, better the devil you know.
Yep.
Lots of us stay fixed in positions, and that's the influence that we have. The influence is don't dare to be different, don't dare to be happy, don't dare to fulfil yourself, put up with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm thinking while you've been musing there, I wasn't really listening to what you were saying. As usual.
Oh, normal then, yeah.
I got to keep this going. I'm in charge here. Don't forget.
just back away from the microphone a little bit.
Thinking about Connie, actually, the artist.
Yep.
Who, a listener who suggested this, and because it influence from a creative perspective is quite an interesting thing as well. And I know that Connie. Well, I don't know Connie that well, but from what I've seen on Instagram and from the emails I've had with her, that. She travels, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And she'll be travelling to find inspiration, you know.
Yeah.
In different places, speaking to people, different works of art, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I remember as a student doing art, it was the same for me. And I remember we had a trip to New York at art college. I did a year art course after school before uni. And we had this week in New York. And that fuelled my thoughts for like 6-9 months, all my like artwork and design stuff was all just fueled on that. And then it kind of faded. I remember thinking it back then, even that I needed to find something else.
Mm.
And a lot of people creatively, once they exhaust their inspiration, their work goes down, doesn't it? So
yeah, you know, people used to go on the grand tour and they go round and look at all the art worlds in Greece and Italy and Spain. Yeah. And I think that that's true from a psychological sense, is that I see psychologists who get to a point where they believe in some strange way that they know it all, that they've cracked it. And at that point, they become really ineffective as therapists.
Yeah.
Because unless you're in a position where you are continually questioning who you are and what you do and learning new things, you know, unless you're being reborn into a new day every day, then you're jaded, you're in decline.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we know that about the brain, don't you? If we're learning new things, we get new brain cells. If you don't learn new things, you don't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. So I guess the point there would be just keep refreshing your influence as well.
Yeah, but go back to the issue of the children. You know, you're influencing the children, but the children are influenced by everything they experience. Because everything is new to them, they haven't got that jaded look. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, or it's like, fear. You know, but it's emotional responses to new experience. But it's a thing for me, like, if you finish work on a Friday and you say goodbye to your colleagues, on Monday you assume that those people are the same people that you saw on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we fit them into that kind of locked-in role. Whereas we don't know what happened to them over the weekend. They may have had the most amazing experiences over the weekend that have changed them fundamentally. And yet we see them as the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's only if we allow things to influence us on a moment-by-moment basis rather than being influenced by past.
Mm.
That's when we keep growing and changing.
I guess we have a duty to those people and our friends as well to allow them to change too, don't we? Because if they've had this life-changing experience over the weekend and then they get back to work on a Monday and it's back to the same old, then they're going to forget all that stuff.
Yeah.
We need to try and nurture that, don't we?
But that's the thing about you go on holiday and you have the most amazing experience. You come back and you feel great, and then a month in, people say, I feel like I've never been away. Because they've lost that magical bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a case of feeding, isn't it? But, I mean, anybody that's listening to this, you, me, anybody else, it's looking at who are the people that have influenced you most.
Yep.
You know, why do you think the way that you do? And those could be negative influences, they could be positive influences, but it's actually looking at it and then making a decision as to whether you're happy with the influential world you've grown up in. And if you're not happy with it, it's time to change those influences.
Yeah, all the good... Or every like business kind of wealth book I've read, they all talk about, and we do it in the Live in the Present book as well, and on the course, it's about looking at the 5 to 6 people you spend the most time with, because you are the sum average of those people, you know.
Yep.
From a financial point of view, it says if you want to, this is all in the money blueprint stuff, isn't it? What's his name? T. Harv Eker.
Harvey. Yeah.
If you want to get rich, start hanging around with rich people.
Yep.
And same thing, if you want to run a successful business or start a successful business, you've got to find a mentor that's been there, done that, and that's at the top of the game.
And also true, if you want to be a good artist, mix with artists.
Yeah.
It's that thing, as a musician too.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's kind of second album syndrome, I find, when a young band comes on the scene, say like, Oasis are probably a pretty good example, because they hit the scene with Definitely Maybe. You know, you could tell that was written in the bedrooms and they were just like, had to work hard at it. The second album actually was amazing. I think that was they had leftover songs that they were ready to hit the big time with, that they'd written before they hit the big time. But then the third album came along, Be Here Now, and I remember the hype around it was insane. And there were some brilliant songs on it, to be fair. But it just didn't have that edge. And it's almost as if the fame and the power had... They'd lost that edge, you know, because they weren't fighting for it anymore.
But they'd lost the wonder of the newness.
Yeah, and it happens to all... You see it, so many bands, that first album, pow, on the scene, and then, they start hanging out in bars in London and drinking champagne.
Yeah.
And getting in all the razzmatazz nonsense.
Somebody who fascinates me in terms of that kind of creativity is J.K. Rowling. Mm-hmm. She did the Harry Potter stuff, but then she did a thing called The Casual Vacancy, which they're doing as a TV series now. The TV series is nothing like the book.
Didn't work. Didn't even know that.
But then she under another name, she started writing crime books under the name Galbraith.
Wow.
And there's 2 books out, and I'm fascinated by her ongoing creativity as she moves from one to another. She's a really good storyteller.
That's cool. At least she's searching for it, and she's kind of realises that she needs to keep moving forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting, that. Interesting. But a very clever, creative writer, you know, and I listen to some of the phrases that she uses, and to me they're like a musical cadence, you know, the way she would express something, and I think that's clever.
Not like 50 Shades of Grey, which is subpar writing.
Yes.
Something you might say. Yeah. We're going to talk about that next week, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. All
right. Anything else you'd like to say, Sean?
I'm okay. I suppose I have a sense of gratitude to the people who have been positive influences on my life.
You're welcome.
I've met quite a few, even you, Ed. But I mean, because certainly, I mean, all the people I work with, you know, clients, everybody, like that.
Same here.
But particularly the kind of teachers that I've had, they've been amazing. I've met some extraordinary people.
Even the shitbags, though, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Even good old pops of good old daddy yours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he still bounces around in my head.
I'll bet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, what'd you live with him for 15 years, something like that?
Yeah, yeah. He had a strong influence on my early years. Yeah.
Cool. Have you got a resource of the week for us?
I've got a book by a guy called Gurdjieff.
Gurdjieff.
It's called Meetings with Remarkable Men. And it's about the very thing that we're talking about, the people, the extraordinary people that influenced him.
Yeah.
And it's a middle book in a trilogy. But they're worth reading, the Gurdjieff books.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I should look that up. Yeah, I'm going to talk. I'll throw House of Cards out there. And in fact, they're on Netflix, so you can get the first 30 days for free if you just sign up for it.
So just get in and watch it quickly.
Get in there, get out. Maybe watch The Killing on there. That's good too. And then get out. It's a fiver a month thereafter, I think. But Netflix, you know, I'm sure you've heard of them. But the original British one is on there too, which I want to watch at some point.
Yeah, no, I definitely plus recommend the Brit one.
Yeah, we're having a little rest from it because it is brilliantly written, amazingly acted, like it's stunning, but it's just not kind of caught us. But I'm going to stick with it and just watch it at other times of the day. But it's all about influence and power and stuff. It's a pretty fascinating world.
Yeah,
it's slightly frustrating and like blimey neck. These are the people that make the big decisions, eh? Yep. Crikey. So yeah, House of Cards. What are we talking about next week?
We're talking about Shades of Grey, the movie.
Yes, and a wider conversation about maybe repression, that kind of thing.
Sexuality generally.
Okie dokie. Cool.
Yeah.
Look forward to that. In the meantime, go to livingthepresent.co.uk to find out all about us and get the show notes and links from things we've discussed today. All previous episodes online there too, which is pretty handy. I think you'll agree.
Yep.
And in the meeting. Meantime, in the meeting. Crikey. I nearly got through a whole episode without making a mistake. I'm not editing it out though.
No, you shouldn't.
No. Have a great week. Sean, you take it easy.
And you look after them.
See you, everyone.
See you. Bye.